Some will cause acute death, diarrhea, bleeding disorders, respiratory disease, and other problems. But a key factor that we're worried about is when these animals are pregnant and develop a fetal infection. Fetal infection can result in abortion, can result in birth defects. We can have transient in utero infections where the calf is infected in utero and then gets over it, is born with antibodies, or we can have these persistent infections. Persistent infections occur when the calves are infected within the first 5 months of gestation. When it's inside the uterus, the virus infects the cow, goes through the cow, gets to the calf, we get these PI calves. These PI calves can show acute death, poor performance. When I say acute death, there's nothing more frustrating than having those newborn calves hit the ground, look good, you're doing the Sandhills calving system, but you never have tested or instituted any other biosecurity measures for BVD, and they start dying on you. Dave, what's wrong? I'm doing the Sandhills calving system, but the calves are still dying. Well, BVD could be a player in the game, and we can test it, and we can institute control measures to eliminate it. These persistently infected animals can appear normal at times, so you can't just tell them by looking at them. Mucosal disease, severe diarrhea, normally a rapid death in those situations. Some of these persistently infected calves can spread mucosal disease from one calf to another, and you can have a bunch of them die all at one time. If we look at gestation, we can have abortions anywhere throughout gestation. You can have a late abortion, early abortion, BVD can cause that. The other thing we've already mentioned is this persistent infection. If we get an infection with a non-cytopathic strain of BVD and all non-cytopathic infections, if it doesn't kill cells in the laboratory, if a calf gets infected with non-cytopathic BVD within the first 5 months of gestation, we can get a PI calf. This is a 2-year-old bull right here. You can look at this 2-year-old bull and tell, here's compared to a cohort, this 2-year-old bull looks terrible. Okay, not making any comments about Hereford genetics. Please forgive me if you're a Hereford breeder. Okay, what I'm trying to communicate is he's not had an acceptable growth rate. This is a terrible animal. Persistent infection can cause poor growth rates, these terrible animals. They just don't perform well, they don't grow well. But the thing I want you to remember from this slide is not that that animal is persistently infected. I want to make sure you remember the perfectly normal-looking limousine bull standing beside him is also persistently infected. This bull grew well. He's doing fine. He's growing okay. He looks fine. There's no problem with him. There's no problem with him, but he is persistently infected. And what that means is every excretion that he puts out, fecal material, urine, hair follicles, snot, spit, has enough virus in it that I could take it and put less than a tenth of a cc in an Olympic-sized swimming pool, stir it up, go to the other side, let some cattle drink out of it, and 50% of them are going to get infected. The same virus that doesn't cause any significant clinical signs in this animal can cause severe abortion problems. So persistently infected animals can look like this and be pathetic. They can also look like this and be phenotypically normal. But that virus will cause disease when this transmitter of virus infects other animals. We can also get congenital defects. These calves that are infected right around 150 days of age, of gestation. Infection at this point will cause calves that have abnormal brain defects. They can't regulate fine motor skills. They stand like this. They wobble when they try to nurse. Okay, it's a real problem. Most of these calves in less intensive management situations are just found dead because they never can get up and nurse and go. Under intensive management situations, you may be able to get them to survive for a period of time. Unfortunately, you're helping them to spread some virus. But most of these animals will not be persistently infected. Most of these calves that have congenital defects will just be unthrifty. They will be unviable, but they're not persistently infected. The persistently infected calves are the calves that get infected before that time period that don't have congenital defects and can move around okay. And then we need to realize that the immune system in this calf can respond to BVD once it passes 5 months of gestation. So if you have a calf that gets infected in utero 2 months before it's born, It's going to be born with antibodies. Its immune system mounted an immune response, and it's going to be okay. It's not spreading virus. It doesn't have a brain defect. It may have some adverse health events. I'm not saying we want to infect calves at that stage and age of gestation, but we don't see the negative consequences that we would see at other times. So if we talk about Alabama, breeding season oftentimes in the state of Alabama turn the bulls in January 1st. If we look at that, our calving season then is going to be the latter part of the year, sometimes start in October. We'll do our breeding soundness exams on the bulls at this point before we turn them in. I'm just trying to mark out a management calendar for you here so I can show you an example of what you can do to prevent BVD spreading on the farm. In March, a lot of those farms will castrate, dehorn, vaccinate calves. May, wean calves, preg check cows. We might deworm in August, hot month in Alabama. It's an easy time to do a strategic deworming for the worm's sake, but not for the animal's sake. But what I want to show you is this. In this management system, we need to realize we need to intensively do biosecurity from January until August, because that's when the calves are susceptible. That's why you guys in the back row don't need to buy calves or bulls or any animals. And I apologize for using you as the example of the person who has BVD on the farm, because you really don't, and I want to make sure everybody knows that. But if she has BVD on her farm, don't buy animals from her when you've got pregnancies in the first 9 months of gestation. Okay? Absolutely don't bring them on the farm. Because you can make a lot of PI calves on your farm, you can have real problems. The next speaker is going to give you some first-hand experience of those real problems that you can experience when you have BVD on the farm. So we want to practice good biosecurity, especially when these animals are becoming pregnant during the first 5 months of gestation. Because we've already talked about it, it's the first 5 months of gestation when new persistently infected calves are made. The other thing that we want to do is we want to institute testing of calves and introduce herd additions that have been tested prior to the breeding season. And this is not true just for BVD. This is true for lots of infectious diseases. Let's test those animals. Let's bring the animals onto the farm when animals aren't quite as stressed. Let's bring them in when it's the safest time for the animals on the farm. So this is the period of time that we're trying to protect. We want to plan our management calendar around that. Some good biosecurity measures will have effects on diseases other than BVD, but BVD can certainly give us a step up on controlling many things on the farm. And I'm focused on the cow-calf sector. Okay, I'm in the Southeast. I think we have to focus on the cow-calf sector. And yes, all you guys in the feed yards can look at the cow-calf sector and say, I don't make any persistently infected animals on my place. You can. You can say that because all of the persistently infected animals are made in utero. So if you don't have any gestating cows on your farm, you can say, I'm not making any PI animals. I think we do have a responsibility as the cow-calf sector to protect the other segments of the industry from BVD. And at the same time, it helps the cow-calf sector if they are rewarded financially for having good biosecurity. You all know that drill much better than I. So what is biosecurity? I have to keep things simple to actually institute them on the farm. I have to say, what am I trying to protect against? And in this talk, we've defined it as BVD is our focus for biosecurity. The other thing I say is, why not just vaccinate? The third thing is how to do biosecurity. So let's review these three simple topics. Let's talk about what am I trying to protect against, why not just vaccinate, and how to do biosecurity. We've already talked about BVD as far as what I'm trying to protect against. You can also put other diseases on your list as you think about your farm. Is it Yoni's disease that you're concerned about? Some of you maybe yes, some of you maybe no. What about infectious bovine rhinotracheitis? Is that your disease of concern? Is it trick? Are you concerned about Trichomonas fetus? What's your disease of concern? And then develop your protocols for biosafety regarding the disease of interest, whether it's trick or BVD or Yoni's or whatever. Two, why not just vaccinate? This is just a quick slide for you, okay, showing you all the different vaccines out there. I show you this slide to say, and this is a slide that's focused on BVD, there's lots of vaccine choices. I want to be honest with you. No vaccine for BVD will provide 100% protection. And I say that being very straightforward and honest. Okay, and I appreciate the fact that Pfizer has sponsored this. Pfizer has a tremendous product. If Dale Revolution were in the room, Dale would agree. He would state to you, our vaccine is not going to provide 100% protection against BVD. You can't just vaccinate and go home. We would like to, but you can't do that. If you talk to the R&D folks involved with the vaccine companies, they will tell you that very clearly. They can provide significant protection. They can provide important protection. Those vaccines should be used, but they're not going to provide 100% protection. And when we're dealing with BVD, if we get a persistently infected calf in the group, and that calf is shedding virus to all the other calves, especially if they are then sent to the feed yards and commingled with other animals, we can have real train wrecks, even if we're vaccinated. So we have to look at vaccines won't provide complete protection, and we have to be honest about that. And you can look at killed vaccines, modified live vaccines, vaccines that contain both type 1 and type 2, and all, those are good things. Use a vaccine that contains both a type 1 and a type 2 strain of BVD. Okay? But understand that you can't get 100% protection with vaccination. And those are just the things we live with. Biosecurity. Biosecurity is simply controlling the movement of people, objects, and animals. All it is, because this is how disease-causing agents, this is how pathogens are spread. They're spread either by people, objects, or animals. And yes, you can have some air spread of things, but that's not what we're talking about. BVD does not go a mile in the air. Okay? I can actually maintain animals 35 feet from persistently infected animals. And as long as their farm manager and the folks on the farm don't walk from the PI pen into the non-vaccinated pen, those animals will stay free of antibodies to BVD. I'm not recommending that you do that on your place, but on a research farm, BVD is not spread for miles in the air. It's spread by contact. It's spread by the water trough that Dave showed you, where the cow who's got snot coming out of her nose drinking out of the water trough is shared by another individual. People, objects, and animals are what we need to control the movement of. For BVD, the first step, in my opinion, is to identify and remove persistently infected animals from your herd. Okay, and you've got lots of choices for diagnostic tests. Depending on what the return or reward is going to be for your farm, will help you choose which test to use. But test, do you have BVD on your farm or not? Because that tells you, do I need to practice biocontainment? Or do I need to practice biosecurity? Where am I in that game? So first, test to remove persistently infected animals from your herd. And we do have folks that are working on BVD. There is the NCBA BVD working group that's going to provide you literature. If you're interested more in test selection, I would strongly encourage you to visit the BVD control booth that you will find in the Exhibitor Center. They're not trying to sell you anything. They're simply trying to provide educational information to you to help you with BVD control. So if you have more questions about which test should I use on BVD, stop by that booth, talk to the folks there. You can't identify them just by looking at them. It'd be nice if you could. You know, if you'd go through your farm and say, every animal that has that poor performance, I'm going to test that one for BVD and I don't have to test the other ones. But it doesn't work that way. Sometimes it's the animals that look phenotypically normal who are shedding the virus that's causing other cows to abort or decrease fertility or cause other problems on your farm. You can't visually diagnose all the PI animals. Number two, and you have this sheet in your list, in your handout, on that back page, don't introduce cattle into your herd that lack previous testing for BVD, especially during the first 5 months of the breeding season. And you'll understand that. You don't want to bring virus onto the farm because that persistently infected animal is doing a great job of spreading virus. Test the animals before they come on the farm. quarantine animals for a period of 21 days while you're getting all that testing done, so that they're not going to have an acute infection and spread it to other animals on the farm. We've already talked about the disease control process down there. Number three, prevent your cattle from contacting cattle outside your herd, especially during the breeding season of the first 5 months of gestation. Now look, I started this presentation with the slide. I'm not trying to stop you from doing what you need to do. Some of you all, because of the existence of the operation that you're working with, you need to exhibit animals. You need to show animals. Some of you all may be in a situation where you feel obligated to expose animals that are within that first 5 months of gestation to animals outside the farm. And I understand that. If you have to do that, if contact occurs with your non-pregnant animals, simply quarantine them when you come back onto the farm. It's a great biosecurity procedure. That's going to keep BVD from spreading on your farm. What if you've got to take a pregnant cow and take her to the show? Just feel like you have to do that. If that's where you are and if that's what you have to do, unfortunately, the recommendation has to be that calf could become persistently infected. Okay? If she's well vaccinated, that really limits that risk, but there's the chance that she could become persistently infected. If we want to really prevent BVD from coming onto the farm, we need to isolate that animal until the calf is born and tested. I'm sorry, it's one of the frustrations. There is no good test for a calf inside a cow to say if the calf is persistently infected or not. I just can't do it. Sure, I could do a cystocentesis. That'll cause a lot of them to abort. Well, then, if she aborts, why do we care if it's persistently infected? Okay? Unfortunately, that's where they are. Unless 4 feet are on the ground, there's not a good test for PI animals. Don't allow people wearing boots and coveralls contaminated by other herds to contact your cattle. I show you a picture here of a group of individuals out on the research farm, and I know the game. Sometimes everybody wants to look like it's not their first rodeo. You know, they want to get the old hat that's all messed up and want to wear some old clothes. It's a great way to spread virus, especially if you just came from a neighbor's herd. Okay? Especially if you're running from one farm to another. Boots and coveralls. BVD is easy to kill. I can kill it with dishwashing detergent. That's why I like BVD. I don't like talking about some of those agents you talked about, because some of those things are tough to kill on the farm, and you have to say, they're going to be on the farm, we're going to live with them. You can kill BVD with dishwashing detergent. It's an easy virus to kill, and I'm not making that up. It really is, and it's an envelope virus. If you simply wash your hands, scrub your boots with some detergent, you're going to kill the virus. This is not a thing that I'm saying, you need to sterilize every piece of clothing on you. I'm just telling you, practice some sanitation. The name of the book, the red book, was hygiene, right? Practice appropriate hygiene. If you can kill the virus with dishwashing detergent, maybe we can make some progress in BVD control. Don't allow dirty or contaminated instruments in your herd to contact your cattle. Dirty or contaminated instruments, nose tongs, vaccine vials, balling guns, dehorners, castrating knives, tagging pliers. Scrub them off. Don't transmit the virus with those objects. The reason I showed this picture, I come from Central Kentucky. My father runs a farm supply center there in Central Kentucky, has for the past 25 years. Had some small producers that wanted him to provide a little portable chute system they could rent. You know, because they only need it 1 week a year. Let me rent the portable chute system, take it from your farm to mine. That's a great way to spread virus. What do you rent? What do you borrow? What do you not simply scrub off with a little bit of dishwashing detergent before you allow it to contact your cattle? What do I rent? Those are concerns about biosecurity. And then we can go down the list. Okay, fly control. Maybe some blood-sucking flies can play a role here. Don't think they're extremely significant. What about contact with wildlife? Yes, wildlife can harbor BVD. Can wildlife spread it to our farms? They can. But that potential is very low. Make sure you don't misinterpret. Don't say, well, since I can't limit contact with wildlife, I'm not going to test for persistently infected animals. I think you are disproportionately associating risk. There's more risk with animals, there's more risk with people and objects than there is with wildlife. So don't disproportionately allocate that risk and allow that not to make decisions for you. So with that, that's just a focus on bovine viral diarrhea virus. That's a focus looking at how you can implement some biosecurity procedures. The greatest risk is movement and mixing of cattle. Stress, naive groups, purchase of new additions. I've seen some really neat outbreaks with GBD. Let me give you some recipes for disaster. Buy a bunch of new heifers and then commingle those new heifers with your cows as you do an estrus synchronization protocol. That'll get you some real infertility and some real persistently infected calves. Because you commingle them. You got them all. You got your dominoes close together. When you do that estrus synchronization protocol, you know, and then you want to check heat, so you want the cows up there close to the house. So let's put the dominoes real close together so we can check heats. Well, that's great. Especially if we've just bought some new heifers to put in the group. Think about how you handle the animals. Segregate populations, especially those new animals you're purchasing. Maintain a stable herd. Semen and embryos are a great way to introduce new genetics without introducing virus. If your straw of semen has the letter CSS on it, which stands for Certified Semen Services, it's safe. You've got biosecurity built into that straw of semen. If your embryos have been washed 10 times, according to International Embryo Transfer Society protocols, they have a great degree of safety. If you need new genetics, that's a way to do it